Thank you for downloading this podcast from the Echo page. Echo membership will provide you with unlimited access to other educational material, as well as a huge number of other advantages. Please check this out at www.echo-ibd.eu.
Hello everyone, thank you for downloading this podcast focusing on vaccination and IBD. I'm Branver Sooks, I'm a final year PhD student and training gastroenterology at the Tertiary IBD Referral Center of Leuven, Belgium. In the next 10 minutes, I will walk you through the current data and recommendations on vaccination in IBD, which are mainly based on the ECHO guidelines published in 2014 by Jean-François Raillet and colleagues. The treatment of IBD has been revolutionized over the past decade by the increased availability of immunomodulators and biological agents. Different immunomodulators may alter immune responsiveness by different mechanisms and to varying degrees, and therefore patients with IBD are considered immunocompromised. An immunocompromised host has an alteration in phagocytic, cellular, and/or humoral immunity, which increases the risk of an infectious complication or an opportunistic process. Therefore, vaccination should routinely be discussed in all IBD patients. Additionally, as many of our IBD patients are traveling frequently, information and guidance is warranted, especially in case live vaccines are required. According to the very recent ECHO diagnostic guidelines, vaccination is best given prior to initiating any immunomodulatory therapy in order to achieve the optimal immunological response. Therefore, assessment of both hepatitis A and B serology, as well as measles and varicella serology, are recommended at diagnosis. In patients with positive hepatitis B surface antigen or hepatitis C antibodies, viremia should also be quantified. Finally, although vaccination is not available, current ECHO guidelines also recommend a screening for HIV, EBV and CMV at diagnosis. Before we go into the detail on the different recommendations per individual vaccine, I would like to draw your attention on the difference between non-live and live attenuated vaccines. In contrast to non-live vaccines, which can be administered safely at any time point during the disease course, live attenuated vaccines cannot. As the word says, they contain live attenuated viruses and can therefore not be administered during immunomodulatory therapy or immunosuppressive therapy. Prior to the administration of a live vaccine, immunomodulators and biologicals have to be discontinued for at least 3 months and should not be reinitiated within the first month after vaccination. The only live attenuated vaccines currently available are the BCG vaccine against yellow fever, measles mumps rubella vaccine, and the varicella zoster vaccine. In general, some vaccination recommendations apply to all IBD patients. First, hepatitis B vaccination is recommended in all hepatitis B anticorps seronegative patients with IBD. Efficacy of hepatitis B vaccination is impaired in IBD, probably by the disease itself and by anti-TNF drugs. Anti-hepatitis B response should therefore be measured 4 to 8 weeks after completion of the 3-dose vaccination, as higher doses of the immunizing antigen may be required to provide protection. Second, annual vaccination with tri- or quadrivalent inactivated influenza vaccine is an effective strategy to prevent influenza and is therefore recommended routinely in all IBD patients on any immunosuppressive agent. In contrast, live attenuated influenza vaccines are no longer recommended. Moreover, as patients with IBD immunosuppressants are considered to be at risk for pneumococcal infections, we recommend pneumococcal vaccination shortly before initiating immunomodulators. Initially, a 13-valent pneumococcal conjugate vaccine is administered, followed by a 23-valent vaccine 8 weeks later. Afterwards, the 23-valent vaccine should be re-administered every 5 years. Furthermore, routine prophylactic HPV vaccination is recommended both for females and males according to national guidelines. Varicella seronegative patients should complete a 2-dose course of the varicella vaccine at least 3 weeks prior to commencement of any immunosuppressive therapy. Subsequent immunization can only be administered after 3 months cessation of all immunosuppressive agents due to its live attenuated character. Although vaccination is at discretion of the treating physician in discussion with the individual patients, we should pay attention particularly in patients with high-risk contact like teachers, people working at nursery, etc. Finally, basic vaccines against tetanus are recommended every 10 years, as well as the diphtheria vaccine. The polio and the pertussis vaccine only have to be boosted once during adulthood. Importantly, IBD does not need to restrict patients for foreign travels. However, patients traveling to developing regions should have pre-travel consultation, especially if they are on immunomodulators. All IBD patients should have hepatitis A vaccination according to the guidelines for the general population before travel to endemic areas, with at least two doses being administered before travel. Finally, households and other close contacts of individuals with altered immunocompetence should receive all age-appropriate vaccines, with the exception of the live oral polio vaccine. To minimize the potential rotavirus transmission, hand hygiene measures after contact with feces of rotavirus-vaccinated children should be carefully taken for at least 1 week. In conclusion, although efficacy of vaccines may be suboptimal and in some cases require booster injections, non-live vaccines can be administered safely in patients on immunosuppressive therapies. The vaccination scheme of immunosuppressant patients should be updated for the following diseases in addition to the other routine vaccinations. In conclusion, although efficacy of vaccines may be suboptimal and in some cases require booster injections, non-live vaccines can be administered safely in patients on immunosuppressive agents. The vaccination scheme of immunosuppressed patients should be updated for the following diseases in addition to the other routine vaccinations: seasonal influenza vaccination, hepatitis B, pneumococcal diseases, and human papilloma virus. In contrast, live vaccines, including yellow fever, BCG vaccinations, the varicella zoster vaccine, and measles, mumps, and rubella, are contraindicated during immunosuppressive therapy. If a live vaccine is required during immunosuppressive therapy, stop therapy 3 months before and withhold for 4 weeks after live vaccine injections. Nevertheless, the risks to be infected should always be balanced against the urgency to start or the safety to discontinue immunosuppressive therapy and should be extensively discussed with your patients. Finally, with the expanding therapeutic armamentarium for IBD, including drugs with new modes of action, an update of the eco-vaccination guidelines is expected in the upcoming years, as guidelines may differ according to these new drugs. Thank you for your attention. As we realize the content of this podcast is very concise, we encourage you to visit the e-learning platform of ECHO, which you, being an ECHO member, should have unlimited access at www.echo-ibd.eu. Additionally, we also refer to the ECHO Opportunistic Infection Consensus Manuscript, published in 2014 in JCC by Jean-François Rayet and colleagues. Thank you for your attention.